Bless up for tuning in to Project Cheney. Magic happens when you question everything. Conspirituality becomes reality, weirdness is welcomed, and it's okay to change your mind. Big up yourself.
Hey, you guys, welcome back to another episode of Project Cheney. As always, I am Cheney, and today on the show, I'm going to have Ed from Truthzilla, one of my favorite podcasts, and so I've tried to bring on. You can check out Scott's episode and Megan's episode if you haven't already. I totally think you should. They're mix of all their beakers of what they add to the show is so interesting. Their show's always intelligent and informed, and their guests are next level. I will get more into geeking out about Ed in a minute, but let's talk about what is going on in this fucking simulation that we're living in. It is the real upside down. We have huge dicks flying to space, and they're in rockets shaped like dicks, too. We had the Virgin Airlines Richard Branson flight, which was, it looked like two planes with a plane in the middle that they flew to a high enough altitude, and then this other plane, when it was in a lower or a thinner atmosphere, it shot off until they went less than the Hubble Space Telescope. I thought it was interesting that the news media was calling it near space. It's like the Red Bull jump or something. I don't understand what this feat is with billionaires that we're all playing and idolizing them, like these rich dudes are playing in space. It started with Elon Musk, and I know, especially in the conspiracy black-pilled world of it all, people like to worship Elon Musk. I think he is total android. If anyone is already plugged into some kind of AI, it's him. I like the way that Joe Rogan always is like, Elon Musk is so smart. He has to like think about what he's saying to dumb it down to talk to me. I'm like, Elon Musk is already plugged in the computer and he's Googling the information. So it takes a second. Like, who wants to be a millionaire and your phone a friend or something? But that guy with his boring company and his SpaceX and his bullshit Tesla car, that regardless of how you feel about the space program, you have to admit that Tesla car thing was bullshit. We live with different eyeballs if you thought that was real. And even at the beginning of it, I think it was the first video of all time that had that many live views that they allowed them to edit it on YouTube. And people saw the actual car sitting in a green screen for a flash second. So yeah. Elon Musk is the first, and then we have Richard Branson, who's a guy that's also known to have an island just like Epstein's. He's hella creepy, just like Epstein, this billionaire boys club that I don't know what it is about people that they're LeBron Jamesing and Michael Jordan, like they're idolizing these billionaires like they have a chance of being one of them or something. It's so silly. And all the technology that these billionaires are using, they didn't discover, they stole it. I'm sure you can look back into whatever they're using. It's not anything like, look into the death of the electric car if you think Tesla is the one on the forefront, and then the rewriting history of it all, that in the next decade, if we allowed it, when you research Tesla in any way, shape, or form, I even guarantee you can put Tesla in your Google right now and it pulls up that Elon Musk idiot and nothing about Nikola. So we're not going to get any time travel, no free energy, no death ray. No, people aren't going to know any of this stuff because they'll just know about some bullshit red car floating around the planet. Literally, we have satellites that went to space that are older than me, and there is no kind of, that send telemetry data back from black holes or whatever bullshit they try to feed people, but there is nothing on that car to let us know where it is in the universe right now. Where did it float off to? We just stopped talking about it. I feel like that Tesla car is the exact same as that building in Miami. It's just like, oh, we don't talk about this anymore. George Floyd, what? This is just gone. That's it, it's part of the MK Ultra brainwashing of it all, is they have broken everyone's attention span. And the funniest part, they've broken the attention span and convinced you that, you know, people giving their kids all this bullshit sugar, not letting them sleep enough. And then they've convinced you to give your kids a low dose of meth to combat this attention span thing they've done to everybody. Anyway, that's 30 arguments I just put into one thing because I was irritated about the Tesla car. Back to Bezos. So to add to the billionaire boys club of people going to space, the guy who literally gained more from the whole entire 2020 lockdown of the world, Jeff Bezos, he tried to take over the American post office, and he flew a big dick to space that had a feather down the side of it. I was on My Maria last night, and you can probably listen to that episode. It'll be like 79, 80, 81 of hers. But we geek out on this feather, the Icarus of it all, the Forrest Gump of it all. It seems to be really important in their lineage. And I don't even want to get in. And I say they, the evil they. It seems to be like a feather, Kronos. I didn't go into that part, so I can talk to you about it. If you look at any depictions of Kronos or Saturn or Cronus, or it's always this Greek god, like almost naked with a cherub or angel in his lap, and he's always cutting the wings off this angel, which to me is kind of a almost like symbolism to us in a way. Like whatever they're doing with time is clipping our wings somehow. I don't know. Maybe that's a whole philosophy for another time, to bring it all into Kronos. We just got into the Forrest Gump of it last night, which is really fun. So if you've never checked out the My Maria podcast, you can listen to me on it sometime soon. So back to Jeff Bezos and his flight in space. I've seen these rockets go off and from Florida, and I'm sure people in Texas, Florida, California, they can attest that if you have a rocket site by you. I know everyone wants to say the entire thing CGI, but it just isn't. I've seen them with my own eyes, but they do all curve. 100% of them, not one of them goes straight up. They do all take this heavy curve, which adds into arguments of whole other things of them not being able to break through the Earth's atmosphere, that the moon might be in our atmosphere, that maybe there's a firmament altogether. There's things that you can look up that are hella interesting about these rockets sliding up against the firmament, or certain rockets blowing up in the firmament. So if you're a person that doubts space, you can geek out on these videos. And even if you're a person that's in love with space, you know, you got to wonder what do all these billionaire boys club, and why the idolization of us cheering them on to get to space? Why did they want to take it out of all the countries' hands? Is it the same thing that we saw with Star Wars that Reagan would talk about? If we all could get up into space, then we could really rule a planet. Isn't that the same thing we're allowing these billionaires to do, is stabilize their somehow ruling of the world, the very Dr. Evil of it? So Jeff Bezos is creepy as fuck. Amazon is creepy as fuck. I think it's interesting that his logo with the smile is a big dick. And that is literally what his flight looked like, a big dick. I think it's the youngest person ever in space, the oldest lady ever in space. It's bizarro. And it's bizarro that the whole news takes up all this time to do that. But it was so funny when there was a guy in the desert last year who ended up dead, by the way, that was going to, quote unquote, prove flat Earth, and he had his own rocket, and everyone mocked it, and he ended up dead, but billionaires shoot up into the atmosphere, and we all applaud it, and the news talks about it, and Anderson Cooper's there with his nipples out and a t-shirt on. It's exhausting. Sometimes I look out at this real world of like Joe Biden talking about drinking blood and eating ice cream and kids and billionaires shooting themselves up to space, and what the fuck is happening? Like, we've all just collectively decided to do jobs we hate, to pay money that people don't deserve. We have hands in every single one of our pockets where somebody's taking out something. We need an insurance to do everything. We need a piece of paperwork to build a deck on your house. You need to include four long arms of the law. Like, how have we gotten into this place where we've just allowed our whole freedom? Like, we don't even know what freedom is. We're all being, I'm sure there's something inside my computer that is totally recording live time, everything I'm doing and sending it somewhere. It's not even an edit. It's not even anything. It's all plugged in and going somewhere right now. And our IGs and our Facebooks and our phones, and it's all digital, our telegrams and our recorded messages. It's funny that magnetized tapes of answering machines of yesteryear, you know, the same magnetized tapes that they put the moon landing on, how that stuff's all gone. And now we have this digital recording of everything. And I believe they know what we're all doing all the time. And it's funny how many of our computers we open and we see McAfee virus software. And which brings me into my favorite topic of things that have happened this week is the countdown clock when our boy John McAfee didn't kill himself, McAfee, inside the Spanish prison. And he's known to have body doubles. He always says he's master of disguise. If you are not looking into this guy, it's hella interesting. Right when he did his dead man switch and supposedly was murdered or suicided, he tattooed whacked with a dollar sign on his arm and then no E. And it was supposedly his dead man switch. And he has a Telegram and a Discord, and it's been running out all this information and all these where it looks like computer codes to release things. And even funny posts back when where people are like, do you follow Q? And he's like, no, but Q follows me. And if there were a dude, if anyone could think that there were somebody that was part of the Q team, there, I think it totally could be this dude. I mean, there's been virus software on everyone that's had a Microsoft computer since I don't know when. It goes hand in hand with that. So if you thought Bill Gates was the biggest evil in the whole world, then this guy, they wanted dead for so long. He's literally lived in a yacht, and we don't know where for how long. He could still be alive. This kill switch is interesting. And so it's supposed to go off at 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And all this information is going to be released online, which is kind of one of the reasons I'm like, I have to get the show out before I go to work because we might not have internet. If the quote unquote elite or the evil, they really are threatened by some information that this dude could have, this fucking pirate McAfee, they're not going to let it out there. And so that clock is setting to count down and I'm excited. I don't like dates and times and everything like that, but everything's coming to a head with the Steele dossier and with Britney Spears and with the elections. And this is about to drop. And it just seems like drip, 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 flood. This is where we're at. And so now I guess I will talk about, you guys know if you listen to this show, I geek out on Drusilla. I love this podcast because these people are parents and they're educated and they actually are in some part of our country in America that is communist as fuck. It's got to be as bad in Oregon as it is California and parts of it. And they, you know, I live in Florida where I'm in a safe place to have a big mouth. They live in a place where it's not a safe to have a big mouth and it doesn't stop them from having big mouths. And they're putting on like a cool concert for a whole bunch of, you know, patriots and freedom fighters to kind of get together and hang out. And they're just showing people, if you're locked out of your grocery store, you build your own grocery store. If you're, you know, locked out of your airline, you start your own airline. And I know these all seem like impossible feats, but we can do a lot together and we can accomplish a shit ton together. And they kind of are. And I like Ed gets a little more into the story of how Truthzilla came to be than maybe I got into with Scott and Megan. And I love hearing his views on vaccines and just his children. You know, I spend a lot of time really opening up with women and feeling empathy for mothers. And maybe I don't have as much empathy for fathers when I should. And hearing Ed's story of always being kind of a woke person where 9/11 is an inside job, but then having his girl kind of open up vaccines to him and make him educate himself on all of that. And then we're in this world now where, you know, Event 201, like Agenda 2020 or whatever name you want to call it, that we actually are watching this roll out. It's interesting how many moms that homeschool their kids are stood in this anti-vax stance with no conspiracy and with no one on their side, and people calling them bad moms and people calling them crazy, and they didn't care. They stood alone forever because it was their kid and they were mama lions. And even if sometimes the dads didn't agree, they maybe educated themselves like Ed did and then started a podcast. And yeah, I hope you enjoy the interview. I tell you guys all the time to check out Truthzilla. They really do have great guests on there, from doctors and freedom fighters and psychiatrists and yeah, everyone. They even have like Tommy Chong. So listen to Megan, listen to Scott, and right now I really hope you enjoy Ed. Hey, you guys, welcome back to another episode of Project Cheney. Today, I have Ed from Truthzilla, the last member of Truthzilla, but I hope to have you guys all back as regulars. So welcome to Project Cheney. How are you?
I'm good. I hope I'm not looked at as the last, though, you know? I hope I'm somewhere in the middle.
You are usually in the middle when you guys are sitting in the lives. I'm like, what an amount of energy that you must feel sometimes between you.
You said it, not me.
I won't put you on the spot right at the beginning. Yeah, it seems easier if I ask you what you think of God right away.
Okay.
Yeah, so what do you think of God right away?
What do I think of God, man? I mean, that's a good question. And I would say my view and what I think of God has probably changed so much, like just since I started podcasting, right? Like, honestly, grew up in like a pretty hardcore Christian family, and I was like a really good boy. Like, I probably haven't talked about this on the show. Like, I ended up in like a Bible school on an island in Canada out of high school. Right. Mm. And it was at the same time where I was like experimenting with drugs and like kind of like going totally against the grain and got in a lot of trouble. I felt like in some ways I was almost like the preacher's kid that like ran like the complete opposite direction, you know, and just like led this life of debauchery and drugs. And, you know, like while I was kind of at the same time, I went towards it because I had nothing else to do. So a lot of my 20s like was just like there is no God, and totally atheist, and I think maybe a little bit agnostic. Mm-hmm. and even I carried that, you know. I got clean in I guess I was
is
32.
Agnostic, like the you believe there's something else, but you don't need to worship it, or you don't know what it is and you don't need to label it. Is that kind of agnostic?
I mean, yes. And I would say in some ways, when you put it like that, there's like pieces of it that I almost still relate to. Mm-hmm. But agnostic, I would say, is it's almost like, well, no one can really know what it is. So it's like there's something, but anyone who thinks they have it figured out like is wrong. So,
OK, yeah, there's probably parts really of that I probably still relate to in ways for sure.
Yeah.
OK,
so. I spent, you know, I got clean when I was 32. So that's a whole nother story.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, so I've been clean for 11 years. And so a lot of like getting clean and just addressing your own bullshit, right? Like a lot of that is going through and admitting you're not the fucking, you're not God, really, you know? Uh-huh. So, but up until just, I would say, until we started this podcast, I was pretty much, I stayed in kind of a common ground of pretty just, you know, agnostic like that. And once I started this podcast, I swear to God, and I feel like I've just been getting like spiritual guideposts all over the place, right? Like, and I, maybe it's just because I'm open to it, because like I've just seen like what the hell is happening to this world, right? Like, and we started this podcast, and I just started meeting all these crazy people, and I started having like a lot of deja vu experiences. Especially when we got into freedom cells, mm-hmm. like I went to this meeting up in Portland the first time, and there was like multiple people that I'd swear I've known these people before. I've met them. Like I've had this, like, I just know these people. I can't explain it. Yeah. There's a familiarity. Like we have hung out, we have had conversations,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know when, if it was a past life or what, but, and I feel like through this journey, I've just met lots of people like that. Right. And I don't even know how to explain it very well.
Honestly, I know that I relate so much. I just felt like I lived in my logic for so much of my life and I grew up so Christian, and kind of maybe my ego forced me to find atheism, but it was so short-lived atheism. It just never resonated as true to me. Yeah. It just seemed like there was already too much miracle, even if it made me miserable to acknowledge it for some reason.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, there's definitely something about, I don't know, 6 months to a year where it just feels like lining up, like the planets are aligning, but it's like people are aligning or something. Yeah. It's crazy.
I've heard it described as like we're in this time where we're finding our soul family.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just, that's always really resonated with me. Right. Because I'm sure a lot of people have had this experience over this time. Like a lot of these relationships that you had for a while are just like totally gone now. Right. Like these people that were important, now like there's these big things in life that just totally separate us. And I hate that in some ways that is kind of the psyop to like keep us separated, divide and conquer. But at the same time, it's once you start getting in line with your morals and values, like you just find people that are in line with those things. And it's just that those connections are truer than anything you ever had before. Right. So, and I just feel like the people I have in my life today, like I'm so blessed, you know, and in a lot of ways it's, you know, I feel like there's a part of my life where I was always trying to fit in. Right. And there was what we've gone through in this trauma upon the world they've put us through is really like, you could kind of go in a couple different directions. You know, you could listen to the box and follow the orders, right? And you could kind of be in with everyone around you, or you had to like step outside and kind of go against everyone and just walk in your own truth, and that had to be okay, right? And I feel like that when I did that, it was the most freeing thing ever. And then I found all the people that were like the shining lights around me, and we all kind of connected.
I say it's like gay people, we have to come out of the closet. Like at some mm-hmm. point in our whole gay lives, we have to come out of the closet. And it's this like, oh fuck, I might lose my whole family, all my friends, everyone I love, everything. And you have to just say it one day, and you have to just tell everyone, your grandma, your mom, your priest, whoever means something to you at the time with this. And a lot of people do walk away, and a lot of people are cruel, and a lot of people are these things, but in a beautiful way, it really sets you up for the rest of life. You refuse to stand in a lie. Not all gay people, yes. But me specifically, after I came out of the closet, I was just like, ew, I'm never going to sit in that. Like I was lived in a lie for, you know, 26, 28 years where I was like, well, I'll just tell my parents I'm bisexual for that. Even though they didn't care. They were like, everyone's waiting for you to say you're gay girl. Like, but I kind of feel like in a great way, it gave me this like different shield, a different set of armor of I don't give a fuck what people think. And yes. Now I've gotten to watch it for all my straight friends because of this whole thing, the masks of it all, whether it's the Trump of it all or the vaccine of it all, or I've watched all these people have to like come out of the closet. And it's really beautiful to watch because you're freer than you've ever been once you get past the pain, like that pain fear. And it is, the first part's painful. It can be heartbreaking. But once you set yourself up, like, I don't give a fuck. I'm not going to like live in this anymore. And it's just like a really freeing thing. But then I think on the other side of that, when you're standing in your authenticity for the first time, you meet those authentic people that you're like, yes. Holy shit, this is the real real. These people are the real real. And it feels different. It's like, it almost feels like that's what you've been searching for your whole life.
100% agree. I think you nailed it. You put it exactly what I was saying, but like, I feel like I've met just incredible people. I feel like in a lot of ways, I'm so blessed. Like I feel like the people around me are just like so great and amazing. I feel small, like in this big sea of like amazing people. Right.
Yeah. I think that's the kind of the almost the best way of the Fibonacci to be. Like if you can always feel like you're amongst giants, like spiritually or emotionally, and just, I don't know. I felt like I spent so much of my life where I'm like, I want to be a teacher. I want to, you know, teach people that like egoic, like I want to be a teacher. I want to hang out and have that vibe. But now I'm like, oh, I just want to be a student and sit and bask in these people's, whatever. Sometimes people don't even realize how brilliant they are about what. They could just feel things differently or like walk through life differently. And they're like, oh, I'm so dumb, or I don't know anything, or I don't. And I'm like, what? You're surviving. Like, are you kidding? Like, that's everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. It's pretty great.
Yeah. I guess at this point in my life, I just want to disconnect from the matrix as much as possible. You know, I still have my tentacles cause I have children. It's probably my biggest driving force though, you know, my daughter is of age to go into school this year. Ugh. And knowing what I know, it's, I don't want to put her in public school. Right. And besides the fact that here, they're still masking, they're still social distancing, there's still all this obedience training, right? Like just the curriculum as a whole, right? Like what they're teaching them is, it scares me. I feel like I'll have to be deprogramming as much as they're in school just to like balance them out. Right. But I also don't want to, I also don't want to indoctrinate them either, right? Like I just want to teach them to think, but I feel like there's so much indoctrination going on in the school system. So it's a difficult time having young children. I mean, it's a difficult time having children, but you know, the good thing is there's lots and lots of people like me figuring out this exact same thing. Right. And we're figuring out how to do things without dependent on that system. Right. So, there's a lot of people setting co-ops up and stuff like that. So I just have to do more research and meet more people because there's lots of amazing people that are doing the same thing.
Yeah, I should say too, if you're listening to this and haven't listened to Scott's episode and Megan's episode of this, I was just assuming everyone has. You're in Oregon and it's, you know, as close to communist China in our country kind of that you get out here. And you also said freedom cells, which anytime I can tout off or give you guys space to tout off about it. What's freedom cells?
So freedom cells, the best way I like to describe it is, you know, as opposed to like the World Economics Forum's Build Back Better, freedom cells is build your own better. It's separate from the system, you know, like learn how to become completely independent of that system. It's people coming together that are all freedom minded and that want to learn skills and feed off of each other, learn, you know, whether it's farming or just like homemaking, could be, you know, any kind of thing, you know, but we get together at, like some of the people we've met, like we know these people that are gleaners and they have basically like gleaning. They have all these, let me see if I can explain it well. They're like a food bank they they get donated all this food from all these different organizations, and they if you sign up to be a member of them, they can give you food. So you have to do work hours and like a monthly fee. And so we'll go out there and work, and they'll stock up our cupboards with food. So
that's
we have
awesome.
Like, we have backup food, you know, it's all people that are like-minded, that are just trying to set up a new way of life. Some people are trying to, basically build like communes with like where people live on this land together and live off each other. There's kind of all the different things you could think of, but it's all people like us that kind of see the writing on the wall, see what's coming. And whether or not that comes or not, it's these are the kind of relationships I want to set up in my life, you know, and the kind of skills I want to learn.
It's really beautiful, and it's people that are all putting their money where their mouth is. They're all not just spreading fear on the internet or trolling people on the internet or fighting with their family on Facebook. They're actually people that are like showing up every day and doing something to make the world better. In the immediate, everybody thinks they can't change the world, but you can actually change your town. Like, I feel like we are so busy all the time looking at presidents and kings, but nobody knows who their mayor is.
Yeah.
Like
100%, 100%.
All right, look, your state's a perfect example of how important your governor can be.
God, I mean, yeah, we have the worst governor. We have Kate Brown. For those who don't know, she's literally like China's puppet, is how I see it. You know, she wants a position in the Biden cabinet. I believe that, and she's doing everything she can, and she's held on to this power, these lockdowns. Like we just lifted the mask mandate finally, but she extended the emergency powers through the end of the year. So, I think any of us would be not. I think that in the fall, there's a good chance that we could be seeing lockdowns again. And I would think that Oregon could be the first place to have them.
I think so too. There's just something about the, just in Portland alone, and this is the danger, I think, of these super cities and places like Oregon, these Austins and places like Texas. Because Florida spread out the way it is, the Miami and Orlando's of it all can't pull us down, because we also have Tampa's and Jacksonville's that like compete on that red blue scale. So it keeps us as this even keel, but most states don't have that at all. So you have this place that's a whole bunch of people like a Portland that all go to this place and are very easily conformed people. They're all people that, I mean, if you look at agendas out there, this could offend people when I say it, but like the trans agenda specifically, I never seen it hit a town like a wildfire like it did Portland, Oregon. It doesn't make sense to me that you can just convince me every lesbian in a town is a transgendered man overnight. I'm like, what's in the water here? Everybody's like, Oregon has the best water. The reservoir in Portland's the best water. You can just drink it right out of the tap. It doesn't have fluoride. And I'm like, but what else does it got?
Yeah, I still get water delivered, but Portland is, I mean, half of our population. And, you know, it's funny because I live in Springfield, which is Eugene, Springfield. Our sister towns are right next to each other. Springfield's a little smaller, but Eugene is mini Portland, and Springfield is just totally the opposite. It's really interesting. You cross the line and you're in a totally different world, which is kind of nice in a lot of ways. But Oregon specifically, though, we have, you know, between Eugene, Salem, and Portland, like that is all the blue in the whole state. And the rest of the state, I mean, they're actually trying to secede to Idaho. They've actually passed some things to see if they can. And of course, they're never going to let them, but there's half the state wants out, right? They want out.
What do you think of secession?
What do I think? If they were to do it, I would move over to that part, right? And I would love to be a part of Idaho as opposed to
Oregon. What about
if
you saw like the South secede?
If I saw what?
The South secede again, like Florida, Texas, like if you see this country divide in that kind of way, which it seemingly looks like blue states, red states. And
yeah, I mean, honestly, if I think I would love it, because I would just move to the free part, right?
You're like, do it, please. Just tell me where it's free.
I was already considering, you know, Texas or Florida anyway. So, you know, if they were to secede, like I would be, I'd be like, yes, do it.
Like get away from this. Like, let's go back to the Constitution of it all.
Yes, please, please.
Yeah. There's too much. It's so much of liberal, so much of the bleeding heart, I should say, I really do in love, like, but I don't know. It used to just be farming was farming. It was red to be a farmer. And then it became somewhere in Oregon. It was really like liberal to have an urban farm. But it seems weird that it's like they mock all these farmers across America. But then it's like, but we can build this farm in the middle of a city, guys. And we can like all take part and then all pick a tomato. And this is all great. But then they mock and vote against all the laws that support real farmers in places. And are all for paying any amount of money that the government tells them to pay for anything that they put a clever name on. So they call something like, this isn't Oregon, this is the country as a whole, but like they'll just call something like art in schools bill. But when you really read the bill, it's all like some senator getting a ton of money for some travel expense here and some like weird organization you never heard of getting money here. But no one's looking at it. They're just hearing the title of these bills. And it just seems like such headlines. It just seems like such a simple, like even mandate, the word mandate. Like they might put another mandate on us. Still not a law, but the weird kind of Nazi Germany that Oregon is, it's like an uncomfortable energy of people who all feel entitled enough to say some shit to you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's crazy. And I mean, so for a lot of my life, I considered myself a liberal, right? And for part of me,
are you from the Pacific Northwest?
Yes.
Okay. Are you from around there?
I grew up in Eugene.
Oh, okay. So you know all about the whole area.
Yeah. Yeah. but I guess I feel like, you know, in some ways I've changed, but in a lot of ways they've changed the definition of what the word means, right? Like I think a lot of these people have just been co-opted, right? I mean, in Eugene specifically, it was known as like a real hippie town. I mean, this country fair is Eugene, which is a pretty, you know, well-known festival that goes on every year. And for liberal, I mean, I thought it always meant, you know, you do you and I'll do me, you know, and
we
whatever
were anti-vax
and
wanted a chicken coop. I've been barefoot at that town fair. I know all about that. I didn't have my tits out, but I saw tits out.
now it's like, you know, if you're liberal, that means go along with the Democrats, right? And it's the far left. The far left has been completely co-opted, right? Like it is follow the rules. It's obey, you know. It's funny. I used to live with this guy. I lived in this punk house like when I was probably 21, and this old gay cross-dressing guy that was just hung out with all the punk rockers, and we lived in this house, and he was this amazing artist. His name was Ray, but he used to always say hippie yippie corporation, and he used to say that 20 some years ago, you know. And I think there's so much truth about that in Eugene, right? Like these hippies, they're totally out fighting the man, doing their thing, and then they somehow came into money and they're all part of the corporation. I've seen that progression as I got older. Right. And a lot of Eugene is like that.
I used to call it the free Tibet with purchase syndrome.
That's great.
Because it's just like this. It's wants to be so anti a culture, but then it becomes a culture in its own with a judgment and stigma of its own, with a style of its own, that the style still costs money. So it's not any kind of real hippie. It's like a Ben and Jerry's of it all. It's like, oh, we eat different ice cream than you. Do you? It's in all the same stores my ice cream's in. Like, and then this elite, I don't know. I think somewhere there was good hippies and then they gave them credit cards.
Yeah. Totally.
It had to have been around that time. Like there must have been good hippies once spinning in a field, and then they were like, what's this credit card, and got a guitar, and then we're like, oh, I have to pay for this guitar, I have to get a job now.
Yeah.
Like the
don't even get me started on the punk rockers.
That makes me the saddest.
Oh, I know. It's like that's where I grew up. I was always in the punk rock scene, playing in punk rock bands and everything. And now it's like anyone I knew from that scene, I can't even talk to anymore. Like they're just all completely brainwashed. They're just all get your vaccine, you know, save grandma.
I know. Can you imagine? I just can't even fathom like the misfits, and then they all have masks on. Like we're in just a whole different world. We're in this whole other world of the most punk rock thing you could do. Like if you really wanted to go balls out, wear a MAGA hat.
Yeah, totally. 100%. Yeah.
That is so like you
should, that would almost backwards. Be like, that's almost like what you should do is like start a punk rock band, call it the MAGAs, all wear MAGA hats. Like I could totally see it. I would go see that show any day.
Punk rock used to be all black. Now it's red.
Yeah, totally.
Your band's all red and you just towed off about like the election was stolen. Who were you that's in high great. School? Were you just a punk rock kid?
You know, I was, I certainly was a punk rock kid towards the end of high school. I spent a lot of time trying a lot of different things. I had a lot of different hairstyles, a lot of different looks. And, you know, I feel like I struggled to fit in. I never really fit in high school. And part of it, you know, I mean, I was this also this good Christian kid that liked punk rock. So I was kind of already like these, not an oxymoron, but just an odd duck anyways. Right. So, that's when I started playing punk rock and, you know, I was terrible and, but started playing in bands and doing that thing. And, yeah, I don't know. I was, also a campus life leader and, you know, hanging out in youth groups and doing, camp retreats in the summer.
You know that REM song, Losing My Religion?
Yes.
I really always hated that song. I really maybe just started to like actually be like, oh, wow, this song, like in the last 3 months to 6 months, maybe a year. But when did you lose your religion? And was it scary? Like when was the peel away of that? Like now when I listen to that song sure. of like, that's me in the corner, that's me in the spotlight, losing my religion, this whole, I can have my whole, I can look back at it of myself like a hurricane almost and be like, holy shit, that was a heady, scary time in my life. And it was weird to go atheist first, but it seems like everyone may, like when you have this whole peel away from the church, you have a peel away from God. Or source or any of it. You like give sure. the church almost all the credit of any energy. And then you're like, fuck that energy. Or something happens weird like that.
Totally. No, I mean, for me, it was, you know, I alluded to it. After high school, I went to this little island off of BC, Canada, Thetis Island. There's this little college of probably.
What was it called? Thetis Island?
Thetis Island.
Oh, Thetis.
Capron Ray. Yeah. Capron
like,
Ray.
What? This is a creepy island name, Thetis Island.
But yeah, I didn't just go like to a Christian school. I went to a little island off of BC, Canada. So, which my church had taken me up there several times for like trips. So I knew where it was and a little bit of what it was about. So I ended up on this island and, you know, you weren't allowed to smoke cigarettes. And I had quit the summer before I went up there. And then like on the way up to the school, I started smoking again. So I was always like off in the woods smoking cigarettes. And it's really hard to hide smoking cigarettes. So I was kind of always in trouble for that. And I was pretty much just experimenting with anything I could get my hands on at that point. So I snuck out of the rooms nightly with a roommate I had and was into no good. Right. So, and to be fair, like, you know, I mean, I just was going against what they were all about. Right. So I did get a pass for the school. It's like a 1-year program and I got like a Bible certificate somewhere. I don't know where that is, but I think I just felt so constrained being at that school that when I got back to Oregon, I just was balls to the wall partying.
Did
right?
you do something that was like the one bad last straw that broke your parents' back or something? Like what was the the catalyst to make you go to an island school? If you
well, it was really, yeah, no, it was really, so everybody was, all my friends had like gotten into colleges and done that whole thing. And I just didn't do it. I think I was just lazy, right? I just didn't apply for any colleges, wasn't doing it. And one of my friends, my best friend for years at that time in my life, decided he was going to go to this Bible school. And I thought, that sounds like the easiest option. Like, honestly, that's what it was. It was the easiest option. So I did that. It kind of bought me a year of not having to go to college, right?
Yeah.
So I really wanted some time off after going to
high school. Did you get anything out of the Bible school now?
I mean, looking back, I mean, I met some cool people. I would say that, you know, there was some cool people, and it was quite an experience just living in another country. Mm-hmm. So, looking back upon that, I can't really remember. I mean, this is, you know, 23, 24 years ago. So I can't really remember like what I was taught. I mean, I know a little bit about the Bible, you know,
yeah.
I mean, I did spend a lot of my youth in it and whatnot. So I know some of the stories, but I don't really remember much.
It is kind of a crazy experience.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, totally. Yeah, like a Bible school on an island of British Columbia. It just seems, and then just, okay, now you're back in Oregon, back to this life.
So, yeah. And I think I was back in Oregon for, you know, maybe a week or two. And I moved out with a couple friends I worked with. I worked at Ross Dress for Less at the time. I had worked there off and on like summers as a kid. And I pretty much, you know, I was just off to partying nightly. Right. And I mean, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I guess I was a late starter into that scene. Like I didn't party much in high school. So when I started, you know, a year after high school, I was just loved drinking nightly. And, you know, I mean, I got into to weed and that kind of stuff, you know, it didn't take me long before I was doing everything and as much as possible. Right. So, and to be fair, like I had a lot of fun. I enjoyed a lot of my life doing that.
Like debauchery, where you're just yeah. like drinking and waking up someplace and somebody yes. has a drug, do the drug. And yeah. There's a show tonight and there's a party this night. And then we're at this house and whose house is this? Who cares? Like those kind of nights.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I had, you know, a big group of friends that all kind of live. I mean, you know, when you're late teens, early 20s. I mean, that's what most everybody that I knew was doing anyway. So, you know, I had kept going until, you know, about 32, but, you know, we were part of the bar scene. You know, it was like, I felt like it was Cheers when I walked into a bar, like I knew everybody. Right. So I kind of had, it was familiar. It was what we did. And we had some fun times.
Do you drink now? Yeah. Or are you sober?
No, I'm completely sober and clean. Yeah. And that was, I mean, I was also the kid that was never very good at it. Like I was tended to get in trouble and get caught a lot. So, you know, when I was 19, I got caught selling weed on the street. And let's see, I got DUI. I got possession charges. I just feel like I would get so loaded that I would do stupid shit. And I would get caught, you mm-hmm. know? So, I mean, I got clean because the last time I got caught was, they essentially gave me the option to go to drug court. And I had, even though I got caught a lot, I did very good in the courts at like fighting and like making sure I didn't get felonies. Like mm-hmm. when I got caught selling weed, I used the fact that I was this good Christian kid that, you know, just kind of screwed up. Right. And so they gave me misdemeanor charges for distribution. So when I got busted the last time, I was in college and it was my senior year. And me and some buddies decided to go. It was spring break. We decided to go on this trip of camping. We're just like, and it was pouring down rain in Eugene. So we're just going to drive south until we get out of the rain. And the first night we started getting loaded before we left. So we didn't go until like 9 at night or something. So we drove a couple hours south, actually probably like an hour and a half. And we hit a gas station and we're just like, fuck this. Let's just go find a campsite. So we drove to this campsite and no one was camping. And we partied all night. And we woke up the next morning to some rangers at our tent. What had happened is when we had stopped at this gas station, my friend had pulled his backpack underneath. I had a truck with a tarp over everything because it was raining. He had pulled the backpack out and he stuck it on top of the tarp. And when we got to the campground, we pulled in and the backpack fell off right on the street, like on a major road. And it was so that these rangers drove by and there's a backpack in the road right there because no one was camping other than us because it was pouring down rain. So they found this bag. They come there. There was a pipe in the bag. So they come to us and say, hey, you guys lose a backpack. And we're like, no. So anyways, long story short, one of my friends said, yeah, it was ours. And then they found all the stuff we had on us. And I was going to get busted with some more serious drugs or I could do drug court. So I decided to do drug court and I never really planned on stopping and getting clean, but once I had to for a little while, I kind of realized like it was nice being clean. It was nice not having to lie about my life all the time. Because when you use drugs like I did, you were kind of always telling a story about what you did. And there was kind of always a lie to cover a lie to cover a lie. And so a little bit of time without it, it's like, wow, this is kind of nice. So I ended up, you know, getting involved in Narcotics Anonymous, and which is weird. Like people don't like to bring that up because I can't represent Narcotics Anonymous. So if I could go get loaded again any day, you know, so, but NA has worked for me a lot. I guess I bring that up just because, you know, if someone hears that and goes like, oh, he said NA gets you clean and then he used again, you know, like I could, but NA still works for a lot of people. But it's been a big part of my life ever since. And certainly it's just a turning point, man. It was just a really big turning point. Like I just wasn't good with drugs. I just couldn't stop myself.
Is it a demon that got smaller or do you still feel like it's the same size demon there? You're just a lot stronger.
I feel like it's the same demon, right? Like, I mean, I can see it in other ways of my life, right? Like, mm-hmm. like for instance, I quit drinking coffee a few months ago. Like I did a big cleanse and like cut out all this shit. And I've just recently reintroduced coffee. And I can feel like when I drink a cup of coffee that I just want it like all the, I think about it every day. I want it more, right? Like it's just, it's there, you know, eating's a struggle, right? To eat healthy. I don't like to be all or nothing, but I realize I kind of am a little bit, you know, and there it's hard to maintain balance for me.
I get that. I can control everything, but I definitely go through weird vice things where it's like I drink ginger ale right now and I'll only drink ginger ale and water. And so it's like an obsession that if I don't have ginger ale in the house, it just makes, it's like this treat that I don't have that just takes away a little bit of my happiness.
I said kombucha. I started drinking kombucha a few months ago. I have one almost every day now.
I got up to like a 3 kombucha a day habit. I found one that wasn't so sweet. And I think it did something to my, like where I was like, is this giving me like a weird, like ulcer acid stomach? Like, is this too much kombucha? But yeah, I definitely went through that phase.
Yeah, totally.
I think I'm falling out of the ginger ale phase, but I don't know what's next. And I definitely see the coffee thing too. I get headaches if I don't drink it. But what was the push of that on us? You know, like the coffee, we pushed the tea into the water because we were like, F this tax. And they were like, well, give them the coffee.
Yeah. I do. I think it's kind of typical with people when they get sober or clean, you know, like coffee becomes kind of the next thing for you. I would drink coffee all day and night for a very long time. So it was a very good decision to cut coffee out for me. I've never had like more than one cup in a day since I reintroduced coffee. So I'll give myself that, but I'm just very aware. I'm very aware how I work. You know?
Do you have a sweet tooth?
I do. Yes.
That's my number one, I think. Yeah. That's my...
Sugar's so hard.
It's the worst. Sugar's and so I'll hard. Give myself yeah. like, I'll eat a pack of gummy bears or two. And then I probably ate so many grams of sugar that the next day my body is not happy. It's like having withdrawal from this sugar demon.
Yeah. Yeah, it's scarier now though, because my daughter has like, she has a bigger sugar tooth than I do. If I didn't like control what she ate, she would just eat sugar like all day long.
And having it in the house, it seems like yeah. kids have fun treats like zebra cakes, Little Debbie's and stuff that like we would never get. And now it's yeah. in the house. But if you put a box of like that in my house right now, I would eat the whole thing tonight.
Totally,
like,
totally,
but if
totally.
I had a kid and had a, like gushers and zebra cakes, and now I might eat all that stuff in 48 hours. Like all the kids' lunches would be gone every day. Because it all seems like little weird good snacks. Do you have one kid?
I have two.
Two?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because my son, he doesn't really have a sweet tooth. He'll eat some, like he likes them, but sometimes he's just like, no.
Who's
my
older?
My daughter would never say no. My daughter's older.
Do you have siblings?
Do I have siblings?
Yeah,
I have a sister. Yeah.
Is she older than you?
She's younger.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's it. Did having kids in the trajectory of everything, did you get sober and then have your kids?
Yeah, it was after, you know, I was actually, I was clean for 5 years, and it's interesting after. So 5 years clean, in 1 year, I got engaged, bought a house, bought an SUV, got pregnant.
Oh like shit. You were like, damn, drinking was holding me back.
Yeah. So it was,
holy shit. I have a lot of free time.
Too much all at once probably was, you know, but my kids are the most amazing things in the world. And, you know, me and their mother ended up separating, but like, she is so amazing and like a great mother, and we work really well together. So, yeah.
That's really fantastic. I think, that's the number one thing that most parents should even think about with before you even have kids. If you're planning on having kids, could I be friends with this person afterward and raise a kid with them and another person?
Yeah, totally.
Like, it's like you have to think of everything. And I think the relationships that become friends afterward, because they're like, hey, this business of our child or our children is the most important thing in the world. And they both can agree on that. That is a game change.
But I think there's more to it though in this day and age right now, because I think a lot of couples are having a lot of struggles. Like the reason I think a lot of why we do so well is we're completely on the same page with exactly what's going on, the agenda, what our lines are that we won't cross, what we want for our kids. Like, so there's, and a lot of people I don't think have thought through the challenges that we're facing today. Right. Like they're going to start vaccinating. I think Pfizer's applying for 5 to 12-year-olds now, right now, to start vaccinating with this experimental, you know, whatever the hell you want to call it, not really a vaccine, but
were you woke when you met her? Did you guys both meet
really.
Woke or become woke together? Or
well, here's what I would say. I was awoke in some ways, but I think we were both asleep in a lot of ways. I think there's a whole story to it. So it's probably better to just tell the story.
Do
like,
it.
You know, so my daughter, you know, we had, and she intuitively was very skeptical of vaccines. And I was kind of like, no, vaccines, everybody knows vaccines are good, right? Like there's no way the doctors and all these people that did all this schooling would not know the science and whatnot. And she had me read Dr. Sears' book, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's his vaccine book that's pretty well known, you know, and it has his delayed schedule and whatnot. And it goes through each of the childhood vaccines, and it kind of gives you what's in them, you know, kind of the, you know, how dangerous the diseases are, what the benefits of the vaccine, like what are the possible side effects of the vaccine, And coming from someone who pretty
much
trusted...
What's the book called again?
I can't remember what it is. It's Dr. Sears. If you look up Dr. Bob Sears, it'll be his book, right? And it's pretty famous, and it was... I think he's probably from about 10 years ago. I think there's a new update that just was recently released. But so anyways, she has me read this book. We actually got it from my cousin who had also never vaccinated her kids. And so someone who wasn't skeptical of vaccines reading it, and it was kind of dry. It was very just like the data, and which is interesting because I love the data today, but at that time, I was kind of like, well, I just kind of went with what he said. And I'm like, let's just do this delayed schedule. So we started doing this delayed schedule with our kids. And I guess it was, I can't remember when it started with my daughter, but my daughter went through this phase where she was literally throwing up every single day. There were days when I think she maybe was sick on top of this throwing up every day, where she threw up like 20 times in a day. And we were like, we were calling the pediatrician. We called ER. We taking the kids into ER. Like, what the hell is this? And there's this common response you get is just like, it's normal. There's nothing's really wrong.
Pedialyte
was like, one that what? They said constantly. And then when we had my son, we started giving him his shots, and it was after his 9 month shot. And she was, meanwhile, while we were doing this, she was chronicling everything, every shot, what was going on, and, keeping a journal of everything. And she started going down the rabbit hole hard. And this was before it was probably, in some ways, it was more accessible because Google hadn't scrubbed things. Mm-hmm. But in some ways, it was almost harder, though, because, like, right now, there's so many people talking about it. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, it's really blown up in the last couple of years. Even before COVID, it was blowing up. But
no, there was a time where you couldn't find. I mean, they were killing every natural doctor. They were legitimately murdering all of them. And so anyone who would speak out about this, they were just murdering them. And in our country, this was happening. You can look into this. This is like, I would say, like 12, 13, 14, 15, 2012, 13, 14, 15, around this time, there was a whole bunch of people that started to talk about Lyme, these vaccine injuries, all this thing, and they were just being murdered or pushed out of towns or silenced or called crazy or voodoo doctors. So I was, okay, sorry to interrupt. Go on.
No, 100%. I mean, that is still happening to an extent. I mean, you could look at like Carrie Mullisk for an example of like someone who, currently who, of course, we don't know, but, it sure does kind of line up that why did he disappear right before this thing was rolled out, right? So anyways, back to the story, so our son, after it was his 9 month shots, I remember this one night and we went camping and he literally was like screaming like this whole night. And I think we would both agree that he was experiencing there's two of them. There's encephalopathy and encephalitis. I forget whichever one's like the temporary one. It's basically brain swelling.
I think the encephalopathy is the temporary. Encephalitis is the one from mosquitoes that you have to get like the, is that right? That swells for a long time and you have to get long time treatment.
Yeah, I think so. So anyways, looking back, I think that's what it was, because he was just like screaming, inconsolable, and there's nothing we could do. But it was about that time where he just fell off on all his milestones. He's lost.
And how traumatizing, just as a parent, to just sit there and like watch your kids scream and helpless, like nothing you can do to alleviate that.
Yeah. And we were on this camping trip with their mom's family. And her sister is a nurse. And so she's totally part of the system. Right. So she's kind of consoling and like, oh, it's fine. You know, it's just how Western medicine works. They just, they can't address things properly. It's either, they either can give it a pill or, or they'll grow out of it. Right. Or it's a phase. Like I've so just walked away from Western medicine at this point in my life.
I agree. I agree. I think it's more false than good. And I hear people say well, it's good in blank way. And I'm like, that's been around for thousands of years. Anything they try to list that's good about Western medicine, I'm like, nope, that's been around for thousands of years. That's not a Western medicine thing. There really isn't anything. It's just they're selling pills and equipment that then they have sales. I was one of those marketing people. They have sales people and marketers that go around to all these offices and make kickbacks to sell all this equipment, everything from a CAT scan to an MRI to the pills you put in your body to the needles you stick in your arm. There's a marketer that sells those, and there is kickbacks in ways that all have to be done in such a route that's legal and above board, but it is not kosher. And then these doctors get these big, heavy pieces of equipment, machinery, whatever, and then they have to push it. So they go to other doctors and they're like, hey, refer to me, refer to me, refer to me. So now your body's being split up like NASA. The hand doctor doesn't know what the foot doctor's giving you, and they don't know what the brain doctor's giving you. And they have you all signed off to all these doctors and all these machines. Nobody's talking to each other. The doctor's barely looking at you in the room. They're in there for 60 seconds. That's why this, let me tele-doctor you now. This is the medical field I just walked away from, where the new way for a doctor to okay things and see with his patients, all the same payment across the board for Medicare. They got all the same payment to meet like me and you are meeting right now. Can I really see how your knees are? Can I see how your heart rate is? You might be able to hold something and hold that, Mrs. Johnson. Okay, I can see your heart rate, but can I really look in your pupils right now? Can I really just have a minute and see? I can't see if you're fidgeting. I can't see if you have tremors. This isn't medicine. This isn't practicing medicine. So whatever Western medicine is a fucking financial joke. And they're just, doctors and nurses have just become the best regurgitators. And because they've done so much faulty medicine, their ego almost can't. It's traumatizing for them to think of the Nazi Germany they're participating in. So they just have to compartmentalize that into a different spot, because it's the Berkeley experiments. As long as somebody above you is telling you to shock somebody and kill them, then somewhere in your head, somebody told me to do it. Somebody told me to do it. My boss at the hospital told me to do it. The COVID floor told me to do it. The head nurse told me to do it. And so it's just like this layer off that it's happening all the way down. And so once again, not with just vaccines and hormones and everything else and masks, the kids are the ones that these traumas, like how much traumas do we have from being latchkey kids? What are we dealing with now that we can't even hug people because we didn't even have parents around? These kids are going to grow up in masks with all the vaccines, three times the amount of vaccines you or I have.
Yeah, certainly. Certainly. Yeah. Since 1986, it's literally tripled. The whole vaccine schedule has tripled. It's up to 69 doses, by the time a kid reaches 18. But yeah, so I agree 100%. And a good example of that is the Elmhurst Hospital in New York when COVID kicked off, right? I don't know if anybody's read the Nurse Aaron's book, but the whole system was set up. It's just everybody's listening, but they were just killing people. They're just venting everyone, and they were just literally killing people. So that's a side note, but obviously it's hard for me to not talk about COVID.
Nurses knew better too. Nurses knew better. Real nurses all over would say, but we know when we put people on ventilators, it tells their brain to make their lungs stop working. Yeah. But they were still doing it. They knew it was, they were like, when we do this to old people, when we take life support, when people off life support, it's always are their lungs going to work again? So it was just like the amount of quote unquote educated people that were still doing the opposite of not just what their instincts were telling them, what their medicine was, what their own education told them to do. And it's just like... It's backward. It's like it showed how quickly brainwashing could be done to our country, just as a whole, just like so quickly, whew, like a wave. I did not think it would happen. I did not think it'd last this long.
Yeah,
that was so naive.
It comes back to that thing, though, too. I mean, that's how we found each other, though, right? Because we all stood out and stood for truth, right? And there's as far as like doctors, what is it? The thing that they all signed. I can't think of the name of it, but there's
HIPAA.
Anyways, What's that?
The HIPAA?
No, there's the Barrington Declaration. That like over, I think it's over 30 or 40,000 healthcare professionals have signed against the lockdowns and all the things. Like basically doctors have, people don't know that there is a large part of the medical community that has spoken up about this, and they have basically signed this declaration that this shit should never happen again, right? That what happened was wrong, and it should never happen again.
And it was planned for all the same, yes. The heads of all the hospitals that stood when all this COVID was going down next to Fauci, next to Pence, all on the COVID board, all those heads of all those companies, those people all knew it was coming. That's why all those CEOs stepped down from all those corporations, yes, before, yes, this happened. This was all one big planned event. What event 201, like down to everything, every movie they ever showed us, down to every movie that played on TV. I even think it was funny. I've noticed during 2020, they took every little thing's gonna be all right, which is probably a song that no matter where in the world you hear it, and it just like hits you in this place of like, everything is gonna be all right, Bob. Thank you for reminding me. But they took it and put it at the beginning of every horror movie in all of 2020, just to be like, whatever's left in you guys, that's good. They like give us this fake CGI ocean on fire. I just think they're doing the locusts are coming, the end of times. And I'm like, really? I really believe if this was your event 201, you guys just, it looks like a clown show. It looks like a clown show. You guys aren't doing as good as you thought you were going to do. I really believe it's because of people online like you guys, like Freedom Cells, like, yep, the people that are getting shadow banned and kicked offline because Epstein didn't kill himself. The people that have been like, yeah, Hillary, the Clinton Foundation, Haiti, yep, Haiti, that have never let it go. The Pizza Gators, like those people, it will all turn. Those people are all right. And it's like those people are why I think in the zeitgeist now, Tom Hanks movies fall flat, because everybody deep, yes, down, truth resonates. And once you heard it, you were like, Tom Hanks is creepy. Steven Spielberg is creepy.
Totally.
It's like once it sat on you, you were like, oh my gosh, Bill Gates is the creepiest. Bezos, totally, is creepy. Hillary is creepy. Once Joe Biden is creepy. whatever.
What's
it's like
that whispering, Joe. Come on.
Oh my gosh. That's what I knew. Thing. We should do the whole rest of the podcast and whisper.
I don't want to be creepy. So.
I know. It's really hard to whisper that long.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Whisper, yell. There's two different kinds, yeah, of whispers, me and my friends realized. You can whisper like this, which is like a nice whisper. You're like, okay, go to bed or whatever. Or you can whisper like, there's a gunman in the house. It has a little more anxiety to it. And like you're almost yelling. Like, yeah, yeah, you're almost saying it through your teeth. There's a gunman. So you're in the woods. Sorry to bring it. Like,
no,
we're the gunman in the house.
No. We kind of, bring it all back. So my son has this night of screaming, and then he just starts losing milestones. And it got to this point where he didn't respond to his name. You would just call his name over and over, and he would just look straight ahead. He was drooling. He would literally soak his shirt in like a minute. Like his whole shirt would just be soaked from drooling. And I have to be like real honest that like their mom was just freaking out, and I still wasn't awake to it. It took me a while. Like it took me until like she dragged me to the vax bus came through our town, and they had like a showing, and like some of the people, the speaker, Polly Tommy, that's like one of the main people in Vaxxed. And I think it was Jennifer Margulis from Portland that wrote the book with Dr. Paul Thomas, the vaccine friendly plan. She was there. There was a couple of people, and there were speakers, and they showed part of the movie, and just this big discussion happened. And let's see, there's a few things she brought me to, and we watched some documentaries, and I was starting to see it. And meanwhile, I was with her. I'm like, we're going to stop vaccinating. We're going to stop doing it. And she started looking into all these ways to heal our son. We did homeopathy was a big one. She found like this amazing homeopathy woman out of, I think she was from Iran or something, because homeopathy can be really expensive. But she found someone that was like a student, I believe she was, but she was like one of the number one students in the world. And so we've been using her for, I don't know, many years now. And then we did hyperbaric oxygen therapy, we'd go in this chamber with them and just like, they'd shoot like 100% full oxygen in there and breathe it for an hour.
No, Michael Jackson did that. Everybody mocked him for it.
Yeah. Advanced TRS spray, which is something we're actually now selling, but, that helped him get his speech back quite a bit. And honestly, like I tell the story and I always want to preface it with the fact that he's doing really good now, and you would not know that he went as dark as he did. But for me, it was, she really introduced me to this. And
so this kind of woke you up. Like, you weren't even a 9/11's an inside job of it all. This was
I always knew 9/11 was an inside job. Oh, okay. I always knew that. Like, I remember when 9/11 happened, I had this roommate that was like, ex-military, and he's like, that's bullshit. And like right off the bat, and I was like, yeah, that's it. Like, so, and then when the documentary started coming out, like, I always kind of knew, like, I didn't trust
big government, but you didn't know how personal it was until it was your son, like how they were fucking with us on a small scale, like locally and for generations.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I didn't see the big picture of it all. Right. And so I knew like these false flag moments in history. Right. I knew that those were staged, and I didn't trust the military industrial complex. And there was a lot about the government I never really trusted. I mean, I feel like I got swindled over and over. You know, there was like, I have to admit, like, I voted for Obama. I was like, yeah, I want change, you know? And then like, after a few years, I'm like, what the fuck? He hasn't done anything. And now he, like, the things he has done against us have been really hurting us. So
I can proudly say that I wrote in Jesse Ventura and Ron Paul on the two Obama years. Nice. I'm that old school, but look at, then I voted for Bernie. So yeah. what was I doing?
I did too.
Like, fuck you, Hillary, any way to take you down. And I really just thought Trump was like, up. He's just being put there so Hillary can walk into, and we are just new. Here comes event 201 and Hillary's going to walk us into it. That's how I thought it was really going to be set up.
Yeah.
I thought this was going to be Hillary's second presidency right now. This is really how I saw it happening. I saw all this going down with Hillary at the helm, not Biden. I'm actually disappointed in the movie of it all that Biden is the dude at the quote unquote fake helm.
Totally.
Like, I mean, it should have been Hillary.
I think there's a lot of reason to believe that they really did want Hillary, right? Like that was their plan, and it kind of fell through. So, anyways, though, with my son, so I started listening. It was about the time I started listening to podcasts, honestly. And I remember, I had a real introduction. I knew a lot of the information, but it was still kind of bits and pieces. And I'd been propagandized so hard throughout my life. I still didn't know if I bought it all, right? And it was the vaccine conversation, which is funny because it's a podcast with Dr. Bob Sears, who I'd already read his book, and this other woman, Melissa Floyd. They started a podcast. It was probably only, I don't know, 3 years ago or something. And when I started listening to that, it was a very data focused, but there was something about it. I don't know. For me, everything connected at that point. Everything started to make sense. They did a really good job of pointing out the propaganda of it. And they did a really good job of putting all the real data together of how these vaccines have been marketed versus what's actually going on with them. And, you know, a lot of the thing with the childhood vaccines that a lot of people don't know is just that, look at, like, you take something like measles, for example. Look at where measles, like, they'll say measles saved all these lives, because they're like, I don't have the statistics off the top of my head, but they'll say, you know, it reduced it by like 90%, but over this 10 years. But if you look at where it was, like when the vaccine came out, measles was already almost nothing. Like, the vaccine has this tendency to come out right after like the disease has almost been obliterated. And a lot of it has to do with, like, you know, the sanitation, you know, the sanitation that came out in the early 20th century of, you know, just having toilets in your home and whatnot, running water. You know,
trash cans out at the in the streets that come once a week, so rats aren't just pulling out everybody's trash can. It's like the syphilis, the Tuskegee experiments is the one I always go back to, because I am like, if you don't see, there always seems to be something heavy that with the African American community, but I think it's just as heavy poor. We can just pinpoint it with the African American community. The genocide of the gays, they totally did. But Eastern, on the Eastern side, they took away, they like killed all the women in China for like our whole youth, like at least 30 years. What does that do to a planet when you're like, no, the government told them they could all only have one kid. And then they, most of them killed their kid, sold their kid into slavery, hid their kid and made their kid pretend they were a boy. Like, how fucked up is that generation right now? The generation in China right now, under the whole Wuhan lab of it all, is the generation that's our age that is the one that had all their women taken away.
Yeah.
That's fucking totally, so
it's
crazy.
Totally crazy. Yeah, it's totally fucking insane. Yeah.
And it's like a feminizing. They had this whole 30 years of men, and then a feminizing of the Western culture, the whole for 30 years. So like a hormoning of the men, why they for drink milk, become big and strong. Ha ha ha. We have all these hormones in it. It's really going to give you tits. Yeah. Like, totally, it's totally. So crazy. Yeah, it is so systematic all the way down. And and here we are. And here we are right now in 2021, where part of me is so grateful for being in Florida the whole time. It's given me, I don't know where I'd be if I wasn't here, because of the depression and sorrow and sadness that I had to deal with. I don't know where I'd be if I wasn't in this state. But then another part of me that I'm like, everybody come here, everybody come here. There's a beauty about standing and fighting in a place like Oregon. Like, no, motherfuckers, like tyranny isn't going to live here. There's more of us that think like us. And it's not about your, we can vote you out like the Newsom. Like we can recall you.
Well, we tried to with Kate Brown. They just lied and said we didn't get enough signatures. They said we're a few thousand short, which is totally bullshit. But so there is that. So but
it's so corrupt out there unless they that's the other thing too. How can any of us vote in this system again unless the Dominion machines and all that's fixed?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'll ever vote again, like honestly, like in like you said, unless they were to fix it. But I don't know, I don't have faith that them fixing it would fix it, right?
No, it would have to be under some quantum key code Bitcoin-y. There would have to be some kind of blockchain for it to actually be a secure system.
Yeah.
Unless we go back to hand paper, where you go in and you check and sign your little name in cursive, but they don't even let you do that anymore. Who knows how to write their name? Like, they're like, we don't need to teach that in schools. Get rid of that. Everything's on a computer now.
Yeah, which is totally gross and scary.
Well, the real reason is because computers can't even look at CAPTCHA. They can't even see lights. You know, they can't see sidewalks. They can't see a lot of stuff we can see. They can't read our cursive.
Yeah.
That's why they don't want us to write cursive. when our letters attach, the computers can't read it.
Totally. Totally agree. So, yeah. So me, like, my big awakening was really the vaccine. Like, I just followed and I couldn't get enough of it. Right. And there was a lot of podcasts. Obviously the High Wire, if anyone's not familiar with the High Wire with Del Bigtree, that's just one of the greatest podcasts I think out there. Just it's just all
mine
doctors
was Darren
and scientists.
From Grammarica. He got into a debate. I hugely crush on Gordo from Those Conspiracy Guys. I love his brain. I like how fast he talks. I like how much information and wit he puts into all his shows. I love him. And so I just like obsessed about him and anything he did I followed. And I always knew Grammarica. I always listened to them and appreciated their shows when I was getting into space or monsters or whatever. But most of the stuff I was into about conspiracy was all like logic based stuff and not so esoteric. And so when he went on and he debated Darren, I don't even think they intended on getting in a debate about vaccines, but Gordo had not a pro-vax, but he's in Ireland where I would to stick up for him. Not that I agree with any vax at all, but at the time I thought some vax are okay. I was one of those people, right? Some vax are okay, like polio and mumps and all the ones they tell us. And that was kind of Gordo because in Ireland, their vaccine schedule is like 20. Like they only hit 20. We hit 70 for our vaccine schedule in the United States. And so when you hear Darren and he starts to spill like you do, where he was obsessed with it for a while. So he knows everything. And so he's like, no, I'm not even going to give you polio. No, I'm not even going to give you measles. No, I'm not going to give you the mumps. No, I'm not going to give you chicken pox. No, I'm not going to. All of them are bad. All of them, all of them, all of them. And he sticks with his guns in a way. And hearing him debate somebody who's brilliant like Gordo, and then hearing them both where I'm like, okay, these guys could both be right. These guys could both be right. And then him just being like, well, what's your vaccine schedule? And just hearing those numbers alone, we know Americans aren't the healthiest people on the planet.
Yeah,
but we sure as shit get the most amount of vaccines.
I mean, and there's totally evidence to show, like for one, Dr. Paul Thomas just recently did a vax versus unvax study, and he's just right up here in Portland. He had a practice, I think, over 3,000 kids. And granted, he was one of those doctors that was very inviting to people that didn't want to vaccinate. So he had a plethora of, you know, people that didn't vax at all, kids that were partially vaccinated, and then kids that were fully vaccinated. So he did the study that the CDC will never do, even though they have all the data and could do it whenever they wanted. He looked at the evidence, like, here's what the autoimmune diseases, where they, like, it proved, like, if you, the vaccinated, you're going to have more asthma. You're going to have, just like more skin conditions. You're going to have more ADHD. You're going to have more, any kind of autoimmune disorder goes right along with vaccines.
Asperger's and all this. And then they have pills on the other end. They're giving vaccine injury and then thinking big pharma is selling you pills to your kid. So you're giving them crystal meth from the time they're 6 years old. So it's like they're creating it and giving you, so you have a permanent drug addict. You cannot give kids these pills at 5, 6, 7, 8 years old and not expect a drug addict for the rest of your life, or somebody that has to battle this now. And I just know it from my own experience, from people that I love really close to me, that all of them that had to deal with these horrible fucking opioid addictions were all kids on Ritalin and Adderall. And it's bullshit. There's something about that, like, you can't hit and to see these kids where they're like the whole lie about it too was doctors would say, well, if you need it, it hits you differently. If you give anyone on the planet a little amount of meth, guess what they can do? Study their fucking ass off, finish their paperwork. Like, that's what it does. That's what it's, giving someone speed. That's what Hitler gave to his soldiers to keep them up for days on end. And then college kids, then it's becoming a compete that we all talk about in sports. Like, oh, you can't have steroid in sports. You can't have steroid in sports. But I have to sit in a class and be drug-free next to everybody else on Adderall. But we can't have steroids in sports. Okay. Well, fair is fair, right? You know, we're just in this different. So now it forces me to be a drug addict just so I can compete in college against who? Who am I competing against college? Because it's not Americans anymore in American colleges.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. And I mean, the problem, I mean, it's this big revolving circle where, you know, you get one drug and the side effects for that mean you need this other drug to deal with those side effects. And that drug has these side effects, you know? And I mean, I look at people like my parents' age, like I feel like my parents' age, that generation just really bought into the big pharma lie, right? Like they're like my parents, like, and love my parents, but like they're just on all kinds of drugs, right? They've just always been on like all kinds of pharmaceuticals. Like pharmaceuticals are just making a killing.
Everything the doctors say, they believe everything.
Yeah,
like
totally.
They statin drugs, which you look at the danger of those for them. But then they're all sitting on Medicare in Florida. I can speak about specifically. They're a generation of elderly that if they're rich enough, they have a house in New York where they pay no fucking taxes and they made a bazillion dollars off the system forever. Then they come down in Florida and buy up all of our real estate so we can't afford it. And then they're only here half the year and they come and vote shitty ways. But they paid no taxes up there. And it's like, Their medicine cabinets are filled with opioid drugs and all kinds of addictions and Xanax and anti-anxieties and party pills. And they're all on Medicare and pensions. That's why all the companies like the post office are going under, because they all took these huge fucking pensions that were the company couldn't keep up with, because, well, we didn't know you guys were going to live to 100 on a whole bunch of pills and in a medical system where we're all just essentially, that's why they convinced us, you have to go to computers or medical. We need you to go for computers or medical. Those are the only two things you guys should get jobs in, computers or medical, because the only two things that we would have to take care of their lazy fuck asses who voted away our whole country was computers and medical. They were the only two things you were going to have to take care of their fat asses rolling through scoot scoots on the machines on their opiate drugs. Sorry, I have a little bit of animosity toward the baby boomers.
No, like, no, totally. I get it too. I totally get it. I mean, you know, and I'm on top of, I mean, just
we're
on
all
top
brainwashed.
Of the drugs,
we all did it. We all like did, like we all have our own layers of brainwashing. And I know that they're blah, 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 the same as us. But, well, you guys sure didn't do anything about it. You watched your fucking president get killed in front of your fucking eyes and you never did anything about it. You watched your fucking John Lennon get killed in front of your fucking eyes and didn't do anything about it. Like, you guys just did nothing about it. You just kept putting your heads in the sand. And I don't know what we're doing about it. Maybe we just have the internet. Maybe that's what we're doing. Maybe they wrote books and wrote newspaper articles. But it's just like, and if the system was stolen the whole time anyway, maybe they thought they were doing something about it too.
Yeah, I don't know if they thought at that time, but I certainly, you know, I think like my father, I talked to him and he's just completely blackpilled. He knows the government's fucked. He knows they're all liars. He just doesn't think you can do anything about it. You just deal with your own personal life and just try to forget about it as much as possible, you know, but that's not enough when you have a 4 and 5 year old, right? It's not enough because I don't think he sees where it's going, right? And that's what I see that scares the shit out of me, you know, and not for myself as much as just my kids, man. My kids have to live in this world.
You know that saying, like, good men make for tough men make for good times, and good times make for weak men. Weak men make for hard times, and hard times make for tough men. And it like goes in that circle. I feel like our parents were the weak men, and that's why we're tough.
Yeah,
it's like you can be blackpilled, but we were so great as a country because it didn't matter how fucking doomsday you were. You still planted a tree, regardless of whether you had a kid or not, that you would never pick the fruit of. That's why we always continued to be a great country, because you weren't planting the tree to pick the fucking fruit. Somewhere our parents' generation picked all the fruit and planted no trees.
Yeah, totally. That's a good way of putting it. For sure. For sure. Yeah.
So. They didn't even leave the shade enough. They were like, they just treated the country like it was their own fucking giving tree. And now we're all sitting around in Stumptown.
Yep.
I know. It's not all their fault. It is the New World Order.
Yeah, there's always the World Economic Forum and the Agenda 2030 to blame.
I know. I can't wait that long. This is what I do also love about the Freedom Cells, how you were saying that people are like looking into communities, and people that know how to farm are creating these like food sources, because it's another thing I always tout off on about Florida is preparation alleviates panic. The reason no one panics around here is because everybody has a generator and a fishing pole and a shotgun. Everybody. Yeah. So everybody's prepared to feed themselves and provide power to themselves. And if we have to get water, there's a waterway everywhere. So it's like, once you take those necessities out of your life of food, water, shelter, and things, there's a panic that people are not realizing they have. They're taking an anxiety pill for it, or not being able to sleep at night. Because deep down, if you're in your Chicago high rise on the 47th floor, you know you can't feed yourself. You cannot. Yeah. There is no one coming for you. If the power gets shut off tomorrow, you can't even flush your own toilet. So there's like something deep down in you that no matter how cush your life seems, when you're really prepared, there isn't an anxiety. And that's why those people that really have faith and believe in Jesus, or really have a farm and know how to start a fire with two sticks, they don't give a fuck about who's your president, because They're prepared. They have no panic. The news can't tell them a storm's coming, blah, terrorists are coming, because they're like, I'm prepared for that. I have a bunker under my house.
Yeah, I think 2020 has been the year to get prepared, right? 2021 too, but I'm certainly much more prepared than I ever was before.
And you can't do it by yourself. Anyone who ever thought they could go out into the woods in a cabin alone, you can't do that. It's maddening. You're going to go mad. And if you are a person, an adult, that actually has the freedom and capability and know-how to go and live in the woods by yourself, then you're a selfish fucking part of the problem, because you should be turning around and helping somebody who doesn't know how to do that shit. Like, it's like, especially if you're an adult and somebody has kids, like, I don't understand this just like, living in a time of, well, I'm glad it wasn't me. Like, no, this is the future of everything. It doesn't legacy matter to anyone at all.
For sure.
Like, no, have an American flag, put your flag up, that terrorist symbol, like, go put your freedom flag up or whatever. But that feels weird too, that we're in a place where the American flag is like a terrorist symbol, or at least for you, it is out there. Like, I mean, not everywhere.
It's ridiculous, man. It's totally ridiculous. It's crazy that it's become like that, right? Like, and it's, I don't know.
Did you ever think about serving in the military?
No, not really. It was never really appealing to me. I mean, like I said, I think very early on, I didn't trust the military industrial complex, right? And I didn't really believe in the wars we were fighting. And you know, I like to preface that, like, I know a lot of great men that have served, and that I don't support the troops. I just don't support the causes. I don't support what we're fighting. I don't believe in them. I believe it's all smoke and mirrors and bullshit.
It's hard for a punk rock kid to ever even think about that. That's where I was like, did you ever even think about that? But I know a lot of dudes that were like, fuck, I didn't know anything else to do. But then I know people that signed up that were like, I thought I was fighting for freedom. I had no idea I was in a banker war or an oil war or whatever other weird lie. It's probably not even those two things.
Yeah. It's probably deeper than that, honestly.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, though, like, I think a lot of people, it's not even just that. It's that it's a good option, right? It's an option to put your life in a good place, right? It's just looking at your own personal life, like getting out of high school, like, what am I going to do, right? And there are benefits to it.
What they tell us too? What are you going to do? You have to be 18 and know what you're going to do. You have to know what you're going to do. Da, 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 da. This fear, it's like these fake benchmarks they put for us to just make us feel like a failure at each one. You know, like, you're 18, you should have this grade, you should have this, you should have these kids and this white picket fence. Oh, you're a failure. You didn't stay together. You know, like, every part of it is like failure, failure, failure. But most of it's from this outside place, and then we all judge each other, even though I don't judge you on your relationship because mine just failed, and I can't judge you on your failed relationship, but I'm going to judge you on Facebook about it. It's like nobody's even living in a real world anymore. It's like we're all trying to keep up with the Joneses, and the Joneses are having their fake best life is the only thing you're seeing. You're not seeing anything of their real struggles, so everybody's keeping up with the facade.
Social media has been the biggest co-opted thing probably ever, really, right? I mean, it's just so good at, like, putting us all into our own tunnel vision, right? They just feed, I mean, it's the Cambridge Analytica, right? It's the, you know, how many points of data they have on each one of us, and they can just feed us exactly what they want, and just, it scares the shit out of me, because I think that there's more to it than we even know, right? Like, and we're probably all subject to it. Even if being awake, if you're on social media, you know, those algorithms are fucking with you just like they are everyone else.
Oh, yeah. Well, even if you're shadow banned, so you think no one can see you, it just gives you, like, let's say you used to get 100 likes an hour, and now you're shadow banned and you only get 6. it knows that at 5, you wouldn't check that fucker at all anymore. But at 6, it's just enough to keep you looking to see if you're not shadow banned, even though you're used to the 100 and you need the 150 to get the serotonin pop. It knows, just like a good drug, that it's only going to keep you shadow banned for just long enough time that you would give up the drug. It's not hitting it for you. You would about to go someplace else. Oh, here's your account back. It's like this thing that they do, even at what's on the top of your list. Like, sometimes you'll look and it's somebody that posted 15 minutes ago, and sometimes it's something that somebody posted 2 days ago, because sometimes they want to heat you up and get you looshed and get you mad and get a certain click algorithm. That's why sometimes when people see me, they're like, I can at you, I can see you. I'm like, oh, because you're shadow banned too, I can't find you anywhere. I'm like, we're all in the one corner of the internet sharing each other's memes. There's only 100 of us over here. I'm like, y'all need to wake up about vaccines, and I'm only talking to 99 other people who are like, yeah, bitch, we know.
totally. And I truly believe, like, that's how they were able to pull this thing off too, like this whole COVID narrative. I think that they, you know, they knew how far they could push, when they could push it, because of they could just use social media.
I call it the Tiger King, too, just
look at us as they can look at us as like a one big hole. They know how far they can push and get away with, right? Like, that's why they, you know, it was 2 weeks at first, right? And then it was, you know, the masks came in what, the summer, right? And they knew when they could get away with it. They probably tested it and knew exactly how far they could push when they did it. I've always believed that, right? Like, there's no way if they would have said, we're going to lock you down for, you know, 16 months or whatever the hell it was, you know, and everybody's gonna have to wear masks, and you know, and we're gonna, all these people aren't gonna be able to go to work. Like, no one would have gone along with that if they would have done it all at once. It was a slow rollout. It was just systematically done in a way where they knew they could get away with it.
The boiling of the frog.
Exactly.
Like the slow turn up of the heat of, do you think it'd be as easy for them to shut it all down again? Doesn't it feel like no one's buying the Delta variant?
I think they will shut it down again for sure in the fall. I think it's coming. I think and there are certainly, maybe it'll look different, but they are definitely, yeah. Maybe where you're at, no one's buying the Delta variant, and I don't see a lot of people too worried about it either. But the problem with the Delta variant right now is that respiratory viruses aren't going around, because I don't believe that the COVID was the main cause of death when they were calling it COVID. So when there's actually respiratory viruses in the fall and winter, then they can blame everything on COVID again. And they will do what they've always done. They'll say, well, the Delta variant got around because of all these anti-vaxxers, all these people who wouldn't vax. That's how it got spread around. And then they'll shut it down. I think they'll shut it down all again. I mean, look at other parts of the world. I mean, was it over in London and stuff? They've been locked down again, right? They're masking again in L.A., because of the Delta variant. I mean, I think they've created this
right
world
now where it's like less than 50% of the United States is vaccinated, based on their number on CNN, their ripe number, 47.4% of the United States is vaccinated. So that shows me the vaccine's been out since Trump left office. That people have been, you can vaccine, anyone in America can go get the vaccine for free. They scared the shit out of everyone. No matter what number they put up there, I know for a fact less people than that have been vaccinated, because, you know, it's all about them selling the narrative. So if they're telling us 47.4% of the country is vaccinated, and we're led to believe that we were just scared for our lives, and they're giving away the free cure, I feel already good that less than half the country is scared for their lives, because they aren't going to get the vaccine even that CNN is telling us about.
And I agree with you that, like, that is a very good sign. But
and even flu season and cold season, that is also when they spread flu vaccines. Like, it's like all their seasons seem to fit when they're also pushing their cure for this upcoming season. The cause has always been in the cure.
I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But I mean, you talked a lot about event 201. What about the SPARS scenario? I think if we're in the SPARS scenario, right? Like, I mean, another role-playing event by the John Hopkins, you know, then they predicted, they said it was 2025, but there's a lot of signs to point that it could be this fall would be what they were talking about. And essentially what's going to happen is people are going to start dying from the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there could be,
that is the Delta variant is the vaccine.
Exactly. And so when I see what I think, you know, if you look into this, I mean, the ADE that they found in when they, after the first SARS-1, they tried to make a vaccine for 17 mm-hmm. years and all the ferrets died antibody dependent enhancement. I don't think we've really seen what this might
if you
happen.
Guys haven't looked that up, you can find it really easily. Just for real, all the ferrets died. Look that up anywhere you want to look it up. Go on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and look up any of those studies. That is what you're sticking into your kids or yourself or your mom or dad or forcing people to get in your life.
So I think in the fall, we could start seeing, because what happens is with antibody-dependent enhancement is when, with all these ferrets that got the vaccine, everything looked like it was good. They were getting all the antibodies they were supposed to from the vaccine. But when they were reintroduced to the virus, shit went haywire and it attacked them like way worse. And they all died.
That's
so
AIDS.
I think so here we are going into the fall and maybe there actually is some coronavirus going around again because it's a cold virus and they will be going around again. And so all these people just start dying. And I think they just blame it again. There's where the Delta variant is, right? They're going to blame the anti-vaxxers. Now, granted, in the SARS version, it's that honestly so many people die and they relate it to the vaccine that honestly people have to go down. And I kind of wonder, like, if your Bill Gates and your and your Tony Fauci's will be thrown under the bus to make the media look like they're not the bad guys, right? So I could see it going a couple different ways, but I think there's a lot of reasons that the fall could go really bad and a lot of people could die. And it's not going to be because of coronavirus per se, but the vaccine.
I don't think we were ever supposed to hear coronavirus mixed with COVID-19. I think the coronavirus is supposed to be the Tom Hanks Madonna inside joke of their typewriter and we're going to use the tests that are testing for the common cold, the coronavirus on the back of all the Lysol bottles, but they're not going to know it when we call it COVID-19. And this is going to be so clever. I think somewhere that's another one of those truth things that got all mixed in where it was never supposed to be called corona. It was never supposed to be the common coronavirus. And I do believe something probably escaped from the Wuhan lab. I think our country had speckled bits of it that might have got in, but we did everything right as a country with borders and whatever, that then everything that happened with the tests and the masks and the respiratory machines and the Cuomo of it all and all that, that was all just like desperate attempts because no one was really dying or getting sick. The hospitals were staying empty. There was never any body bags. There was never any of the refrigerator trucks that they said. It was all that was, like you're saying, 100% media. 100%. That is who, like, fuck Fauci, Gates. Yeah, fuck those guys too. But the media to me, when I watch Anderson Cooper and Rachel Maddow and Fox News and all these talking heads that have been dictating these narratives to us for 10 years, I'm like, hang those fuckers in the streets.
Yes.
Like, hang, somebody needs to go in and, like, right in Atlanta, CNN headquarters. And Tina, you can't do this. You can't say this aloud. I'm saying it. This is the stuff I'm like, fuck the people we're voting for. It's these people that are dictating. If Anderson Cooper has literally been on the Channel One homeroom classrooms since I was a child. So he has been the news guy they've been selling us since I was a kid. All the other anchors on CNN or Fox, they're like Kennedy from MTV. They're all the VJs that we watched MTV with. So it's like, of course, you're like, why do I feel so comfortable with Arthel Neville? Because she was a VJ on MTV. You're comfortable because you watched her when you were 10. It's like all these people, these same people that they keep, the Dick Clark, Carson Daly, it just becomes another person, but it was a person that we've watched forever. And then we're like, look at New Year's Eve again with, when did this person become Ryan Seacrest? Now he's that guy. And it's all just the same. Okay. We just listen to everything Ryan Seacrest says now. It's so bizarre to me. Even people will turn on Netflix. Chaney, you have to look at this documentary on Netflix. Chaney, there's some good things on Netflix. No, It's the same network channel. It's the same garbage. It's HBO. It's the same. You're picking your poison, but they know exactly who you are. They know if they sell you the meat conspiracy that you're not going to eat meat tomorrow, and then Bill Gates can force you to have his meat. If you don't think it's cheaper for a business to grow meat in a lab than it is for them to feed a cow properly, you're fucking ludicrous. So it's just, and then look at what a perfect time for the meat conspiracy. Burger King and McDonald's start selling fake meat. And then if not for the whatever Trump forced the meat plants to keep working, we would have all been force fed that meat.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that scares the shit out of me too. Like, I don't see people really picking up on that one, right? Like, they're really trying to sell that stuff. And I don't know anybody who's trying to eat that. No one wants to.
That's not a real vegan. That's not a real vegetarian. Anyone you know that practices either of those forms of eating, they don't open packages of Bill Gates meat and eat. Like, that's a crazy business. And I wonder, does eating that stuff mixed with spray Monsanto, then mixed with the vaccine? Like, somehow is this all radioactivity going on in us? Because we know there's heavy metals in these vaccines. Like, I have questions about sexuality from these vaccines, because if all the animal byproducts that we're putting in ourselves, all the animal DNA, we're also putting other human DNA in ourselves. Yep, we're also putting other human sex's DNA in ourselves. So what is that doing to a child in utero if her mom's being vaccinated or his mom's being vaccinated? And if we know they're changing DNA, then guess what? An umbilical cord inside of a uterus, like all the whole thing of birth is DNA exchange. So what are we doing here?
No, 100%. And I mean, specifically with this COVID vaccine that they're giving, I mean, there's all kinds of evidence to say that, you know, it's sterilizing us, right? And I think that's part of the agenda, right?
Oh, like, well, yeah. If I would have taken testosterone or you take hormones when we were kids, we'd be sterilized too. That seems like exactly part of their agenda.
Yeah. Totally. I agree. I mean, it's scary, and I hope I'm wrong on like what's coming.
You're like a anti-vax dad with knowledge on here, and that you're like still friends with your baby mama and she's the one that turned you on to this, but you were a truther too. So it wasn't like I was totally slept. And no, like, there's like, we all need to be woke up to other things. Everybody has knowledge that we don't share. And I think sometimes as truthers, we sit in the most amount of confirmation bias, because everything's been such a bullshit lie for so long. You can't even believe that that book's real. You can't believe that author's real. You can't believe that person actually has a piece of something real, because you don't trust anything.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I don't know.
Speaking of real, when did you meet Scott and Megan? So you're like getting woke and you're talking shit. I imagine you're telling people in your real life and being this person where you're like the person at a party where you're like vaccines come up and you're like, actually.
Totally. No, and I mean, that was... There wasn't a lot of people that I could talk to about vaccine. Like, it was weird. Like, just before COVID, like just a couple of years ago, really. Right. Like, even the people that knew about conspiracies, like, I think vaccines were still one that a lot of people didn't know about. Cause when I met Scott, I mean, he's in recovery too. So we were going to like some of the same meetings, and he's in a band that a good friend of mine was in. So I just had like a lot of connections to Scott. And then I heard like he was kind of into conspiracies. And so I just started talking to him naturally. Right. And he was telling me his favorite podcast.
Isn't it funny? People always set you up where people will be like, oh, you need to talk to my friend. They're into conspiracy. They're like, oh, you need to talk to them.
And so he started telling me his podcast. And I started telling him about my experience with vaccines. And like, cause I was mostly just really down this rabbit hole on vaccines at that point, you know? And so I started talking about that. And I think he was even skeptical at first. He's like, I don't think he'd really dove into vaccines much, but we shared podcasts. We started talking to each other on a weekly basis. We would talk to each other. And then it's really when COVID hit that there was no one else I could talk to. Like, there was really no one in the world except for like my kid's mom and Scott were like the two people that I felt like I could really talk. Cause I knew like right off the bat, this is bullshit. Like, this whole thing is totally a scam and they're going to sell us a vaccine out of it. And it just, everything felt off about what was going on. It felt like a false flag from the beginning. So I remember I would call Scott on my lunch breaks. I'm just like, and I would just vent and just need to connect with someone who got it. Right. And so we just kept talking and, you know, I think we just became better and better friends really. But I was always looking at like ideas on like ways to get the word out or to like say that we're against this. Like I thought like, let's make t-shirts that just call bullshit on all this thing. You know, like, let's make t-shirts that just say COVID's a false flag or whatever it is, you know, just. And one day I was like, you know what? We listen to so many podcasts. Let's fucking start a podcast. And we just started talking and it sounded like a good idea. We'd both been like super in the podcast for like years at this point. So it just, we kind of had an idea, but we never, obviously never recorded. We never had the equipment, but, he just kind of took to it. And what I learned really quickly is Scott is one of those guys that's like a total fucking go-getter. Like once Scott has an idea, he will just take care of business. So, and he says like, hey, I have this other friend that I think might be like really good for it. This girl. And I was like, okay. Like someone I'd never met. Right. Like literally I met Megan 30 minutes before our first podcast.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah. So, it just happened, you know? I mean, it's really the start of like my opening up of like my real spirituality, right? Because I feel like my spirituality has grown so much just out of like seeing, just planted this little seed that's just really blossomed, right? And like all these amazing people I've met and all these different, just like you, for example, you know? You know, all like we, Ricky Verandas, like right off the bat, we Scott reached out to him about coming on the podcast, and then he got us in the Union and the Unwanted. And then we just started meeting all these amazing people. And then, I mean, literally in a year and a half, we've just met people across the world that are just super amazing, that have written books and are doctors and just all kinds of things. And Freedom Cells. And, but Scott and Megan, it was just meant to be. I tell them that all the time. I said, you know what, this thing is bigger than us. Like it's just always has been. Cause it hasn't been easy. I mean, as you probably know as well, like doing this kind of work with other people, you have different personalities and it's like, you know, I mean, I love and respect the shit out of the two of them, but as behind the scenes, like it's not always easy. We don't get along all the time. We don't always want the same things. And we butt heads sometimes, you know, and but I think that it's kept us going that we all kind of know that this is bigger than us. Right.
And, it is. You guys are doing something important, and whatever your guys's chemistry is on the show and what you each bring. And when I watch different interviews or different guests, it is important. Like it's you guys are doing real stuff. You're putting real information out there. You're telling people where to find other good information. And it's fucking hard to do a podcast alone. It's hard to do a podcast with two people. I can't imagine three on the reg, like just with scheduling, just with one guest. So it's like three on the reg. I know I've done two other podcasts with other people, and just with the two of us, with our ideas of the direction of any one show, how yeah. I thought this was going to be at this. I thought we were going to do it at this time. I thought that it was going to be this vibe. I didn't know this person was also coming. I didn't know this person was, are you smoking a joint? Is it this vibe? It's just like everything's a vibe. Everything matters. Everything feels like a thing. And it's, also, when you're just sitting in it and you're behind the mic, you have these questions of like, am I going to be this vulnerable right now? Am I about to share this about myself right now? Yes, I think I have to. Like you have these own internal battles. Then you get off air and you're like, did I share too much about myself? Should I have said this other thing? Should I have contradicted that person? Was that mean? And it's like, really, we're just having conversations. But in a world where no one has conversations anymore, So yeah, there's interviews. Yeah, there's information, but we're also talking and opening up and being vulnerable and sharing and like having these spiritual experiences with each other and energetic exchanges. And it's all so real that I think we're lucky, the podcaster people of the world, that we get this video time with each other all over. I mean, think of all the amazing people that you get to sit across from on video all the time and have these huge convos. And how many people you talk to in the back end, great convos that never go any, like they're not for air. They're just like how many people you might talk to in Freedom Cells, or you might talk to Ricky in just 45 minutes, just shoot the shit and just some great that you're like, I can't believe I'm talking to this person. And I mean, this should have, I would have listened to them do this podcast. I don't know. It's just like you get the most brilliant minds, and all you're doing is being real, being honest, being vulnerable. And you were just like everybody listening to this that were like, I think there's something that needs to be said. And it's not this bullshit on the fake news or on the fake radio. It's like, no, whatever you need to say, your point of view, it matters. And when you mix it with other people's, it becomes a whole different alchemy, like a whole different chemistry.
Totally agree. And, you know, I think for us, like just as much as I think like our story is kind of the metaphor for why it was successful almost, is just because, you know, here I was calling Scott on my lunch breaks because he's the only person I could talk to. Right. I know there's thousands of people out there that felt the same way, that are, they're in this world and they see what's going on, but they fucking have no one around them that they can talk to. And they've been literally canceled. You get canceled if you say anything against like the mainstream narrative, right? So you're living in your world and you're going to your work and your work, you know, you can get fired over this shit now, right?
You're losing friends and family.
Yeah, totally. I've lost so many friends. I lost my sponsor over this, right? Like I had to, like, that was a decision. I couldn't talk to him anymore. We just,
it's heartbreaking.
Not communicate, right?
That's the whole thing. It's like the 2020 of it all, like knowing the new world order was coming and dealing with all that mentally, but then heartbreak of trying to tell people that the new world order is coming and losing people that you genuinely loved and cared about. That was the only reason you were telling them anyway. And there you have no connection with so much of who you used to be just 2 years ago. And then you have people like, you know, online, people that you just met in the last year of your life that know you in a way that nobody that's ever known you before. And it's really crazy to think, but they only know you, all these people online and in the Truthzilla world only know you because you've been more vulnerable and real than you've ever been before. Exactly. But we're all in this place where we're like safe enough to be vulnerable and real because the new world order is coming.
Yeah, it feels like it's the only option, right? It's really the only option. I feel like, and that's the part about walking in your own truth, right? Like when it becomes my only option is to speak out against this at this point, right? And like, I wouldn't do it any other way at this point. You know, I can't shut my mouth. I have to bring it out because it's the right thing to do. And it's because my kids have to live in this world, right? And like, even if I don't change it, like I need to prep this world so they can fight for it. You know, like when we're all gone, you know, I want my kids to be in a place where they can fight for the same things, you know, that they know that what the world was like before. And maybe it's a better world that we want right now. Like, and I've been trying to be on that note a little bit lately. It's like, maybe there is a good thing about all this. The good thing is this is our place in history to fight against tyranny, right? Like how many different places in our history have people had to fight? This is our place to fight for it, right? And that's a good thing. And you know, the things that we don't like, if Costco or fucking Walmart isn't going to fucking let you in without a mask, then don't go to them anymore, but build your own fucking store, right? Build your own organic grocery store. And fucking guess what? There's a whole bunch of us that would much rather support someone who's a local person that has an organic grocery store, right? And it's going to not fucking tell you to wear a mask. There's a speaker I recently saw, Kevin Jenkins, that's fucking, they're literally making an airline, a Freedom Airlines. I think it's called Freedom Airways, for people like us that aren't going to get a fucking vaccine to go on a plane, right? We're going to create a world that's better than it ever was before. So I think this is our time in history to use our voices and to say no. You know,
we say no. It's okay to set your boundaries. It's really part of the, I think, spiritual growth. I talked like last week a little, like, I don't give a fuck is a huge part of spiritual growth, really not giving a fuck. I think being able to set your boundaries and say no is a huge part of spiritual growth, whether it's on the small scale of people in your life that are just constantly taking advantage, or even if they're not taking advantage, you just don't wanna. Sometimes you don't have to, but it's also our government and these big, it's okay for us to say no, no more of this. It's not okay for Walmart to dictate what, like, don't go to Walmart anymore. We can vote with our dollar. And everything, it's, you know, it used to trigger me because people would talk about prepping and I'd be like, you can't even drive 20 minutes to a local store that is maskless that you can go into. Like, you won't even drive a little further away from your house to support somebody who supports maskless. So you're not going to start your own farm to feed your family. Get real with yourself. But every business that I've watched dig their heels in, I mean, just locally, and not shut down, they had the best 2020 that they ever had in, like, I know restaurants that were like, nope, this is going to, the restaurant I work for that I just adore them, Ski's Hideaway, if you're in Vero Beach, Florida, go and stop by. They were maskless the entire time. They refused. Florida only did, I think, a 1 week mandatory shutdown during the 14 days to flatten the curve. And he just had happened to buy the fucking restaurant. And so he invested like all his money in this restaurant and just refused maskless the whole time, put a big American flag right when you walk in, proud to serve those who serve. Yes. And his restaurant, I mean, we can't put enough tables in that place because he's built regulars that will support him. Like, I could go get a better job now, but I'm loyal to them because they gave me a maskless job. I would have washed dishes for them. I would have done anything just to have a job where I didn't have to wear a mask. I had no more pride left. Like, it wasn't even about pride anymore. I was like, I'm like 2 days away from sucking a dick as long as it's maskless. I was like, pride is out the window at this point. But yeah, so I just love, like, even my wife, her company, they just stayed open the whole time, and her business partner feel different about the whole thing. Like, they're on totally different sides. Like, my wife's where I'm at. Pretty much, I wouldn't even put it that she's all the way where I'm at, but she's, you know, a maskless anti-vaxxer. And then her business partner wore the mask the whole time, is BLM, whatever. But no one got vaccinated in their company. Like, it's like all my friends that have kind of pushed me to the outskirts still didn't get vaccinated. All the friends that used to tell me in 2018, Chaney, you're like my smartest friend, I would always ask you this stuff, are all the same friends that weren't friends with me in 2020, but they still didn't get vaccinated. So I know deep down they still believe me. Even if, like, their ego and something else in their their demon, it's like, no one in my family got vaccinated. So I do feel some people in my life that have emotionally, I don't want to say I've let them go, but I just kind of was like I had this, like, I don't know if you're going to be around. Like, oh, this makes me sad. But then I guess maybe that's everybody. Like, I don't know if you're going to be around. Like, shit. But
I mean, it's hard to, like, that line, like, cause you know, for me, I can look back at, like, how I went kicking and screaming, being drug into, like, learning about vaccines. Right. So, like, I have to have empathy for other people who don't see it, because I was completely brainwashed, even though I knew 9/11 was a scam and all this other stuff. Right. Like, so, it's hard, but, you know, like, my parents got vaccinated, right? But there's a line where there's people that I've just completely cut out, and, like, I'm not even going to try with, but then there's people I really love that I'm going to never stop trying. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm going to still keep speaking my truth, and hopefully seeds are planted outside of those lines as well. But, you know, I mean, like, my parents, like, I had my dad watching, like, video from a medical freedom rally I went to recently. I sent my aunt How to End the Autism Epidemic book recently. She's reading that. My mom, I'm always sending her podcasts. So, you know, I'm planting seeds where I can and trying to save those people I love, you know, even though like they've been vaccinated at this point, but you know, there's a lot of things you can do even if you were vaccinated.
Well, we are in trials with this fake vaccine anyway, and any trial has to have placebo. Every single one. And so there has, and I've even heard people that have taken this vaccines and studied them and said they were only saline inside of some of them. So I don't know if that's true or not, but, and then I also believe in magic. So I think anything you put inside yourself, you can actually transmute it and like eject it out of your body. And then I believe in some free will of it all. And is it free will if you're being duped into it? And I just feel like if there's some kind of source energy that we're all connected to, it's not a fair gameplay. If you're brainwashed, it's just not a fair gameplay. It seems like somewhere they have to have the same opportunity that I have of being woke and then decide to go back to sleep if that's on them. But it just seems everybody deserves the opportunity to have the veil lifted, even if it's just for a second. Yeah. I don't know.
And I agree, but there's also it took a lot of cognitive dissonance to get this vaccine, because this vaccine is the biggest shit show of a medical intervention that's ever been brought upon. Like, I mean, I don't know how you could have never heard of the VAERS numbers, right? Like, we have 7,500 deaths reported in the U.S. right now.
Because they only watch CNN. They only watch Fox. Yeah. That is it.
Not if you're my parent.
Oh, yeah. You're like, no, you've heard about it.
You've been
for
hearing
them,
it for years.
There's no excuse. For
hearing,
your parents, there's
for
no
years.
Excuse.
I spread my net as wide as I can with this information.
Your parents have no excuse. All right. Tell everybody where to find you, all the places.
Well, I think the easiest place is trucilla.org. That's our website. We're available on all podcast platforms. You can find us on YouTube sometimes. We've just got off a 2-week ban, and I don't feel like that's going to last much longer, although we are being a little safer with it. But certainly Rockfin is probably where you can find all of our content and all of our premium content as well. And so that's a good spot. Also, we're Rumble, Odyssey, Float.app, BitChute. So I think that's all the places.
Yeah. And sometimes on Rockfin, you guys do like a clown town or something where you just like.
It's our weekly show and we have to talk to you, Chaney, to get you on to do it with us. We did our first one. We did it with Legit Bat last week, where we're trying to get other people to do it with us. It's like a weekly news show where all week we just send each other articles of like the most insane shit that we see in the world. And we just bring them up and talk about them. Talk all the articles, where normally we talk about COVID. We talk about what's going on with, you know, there's a lot of race stuff that they're trying to put upon us. A lot of the trans movement that they're trying to put up on us, you know, and we get deep in it and just we have a good time, but it's we go down the weekly rabbit hole. You know,
I like it. You don't have a guest there, or it's like if you do have a guest, you're all just co-venting.
It's been the three of us up until now, but we just had Legit Bat this last week, and we want to bring a guest in each time. I think it's a lot more fun bringing a guest because we're literally just laughing and having fun with it the entire time. So we would love to get you on to come.
I'm totally down. I'm always down to hang out with you guys. And you guys are on the Union sometimes, Union of the Unwanted.
Yeah, they invite us, you know, once in a while. Scott was on this week, so I think we were on the previous couple weeks before that as well. So, whenever they invite us, we try to make it. Certainly, it's always a lot of fun. It's a good group of guys. Obviously, Ricky and Charlie and Sam and Mike, like those guys are just all so much fun.
And they always have killer guests over there too.
Yes.
And last thing, because this will probably come out right around then or right before then, aren't you guys doing Manifest?
Yes, Manifest is, I believe it's the July 29th through August 1st. It's the Thursday through the Sunday. It's going to be amazing. We have on Saturday night, it's Dr. Tina, Tim James from Health Hero is his podcast, Chemical Free Body. Then we have, the attorney, the local attorney, Bob Snee from Oregon. He's kind of, he's dealt with a lot of the vaccine issues. And we'll be hosting kind of a Truthzilla Live, kind of bringing in all those guests on Saturday. On Thursday, we have Matt Landman, who did Frankenskies. He's going to give a big presentation. We're going to watch the film outside on a big screen. And then we're going to have a bunch of live music. There's going to be yoga. There's going to be all kinds of, they have just like packed stuff through the whole weekend, but it's just going to be all truthers just getting together and enjoying each other outside camping.
This is so awesome. I hope this is just like the first one of these that starts to happen all over the country. I think the outside part's really important.
I think there are a lot of these kind of things popping up. And Scott went to one up in Washington a few months ago, and that's what kind of spawned this one to get off the ground. And I'm hoping this one takes off too. There's some real talent being put into it. So I'm really excited to see what the final show is like.
Well, I love it. I love that you came and hang out with me today, and I love everything that Truthzilla does. So I'm sure this will be the first of many times if you'll come back again.
I hope so. Thank you so much, Shaney. You're amazing. And yeah, we definitely have to get a Clown Town scheduled real soon.
I am totally into it. So thank you guys for listening. Bye-bye.
So she has been Chaney, and now she's off to smoke a blunt. See you next Tuesday, you fucking cunts.